how did you get connected to this famous architect, John Duncan Forsyth?
Well, he had his office here. I had worked for an architectural firm here for 4 years. I was very satisfied. It was a small firm, which I've always liked. They were very good to me, but I realized that I needed to diversify. So I found out that Forsyth was needing a draftsman, and I talked to one of his contemporaries, Ted Kirshner, who was quite a well-known architect here. Ted said to me, "I think the training would be good for you if you can last." Well, I didn't know what he meant. I'd worked 4 years for this architect. Well, the first 3 weeks that I worked for him, he hired and fired two or three draftsmen. He came into the office one morning and came over to my desk, and he said, "I would like for us to have lunch tomorrow." And I said, "All right." He went into his office, and I talked to Bob Stauffer, the head draftsman. I said, "Bob, am I getting fired?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "No, I want you to be truthful with me. I need to know." He said, "John, I really don't know. But if you are, you're the only one that he's ever taken out to lunch." So I had lunch with Mr. Forsyth, Jack. He knew that I was leaning towards contemporary. He said, "John, I don't think you're satisfied here, and I think you need to look for an office that does contemporary work." And I said, "Jack, I am satisfied here because I'm learning, and as long as I'm learning, I'm satisfied." So the next day he fired another draftsman. He thought I was going to quit, and he wanted to feel me out first.
Well, that's great. He believed you, so then that relationship continued.
Yes.
Was he a gruff kind of person? Or?
Oh, yes. He was a complete snob. But he did beautiful traditional work. The B.B. Blair House on Riverside Drive.
And we'll talk.
I worked for him when that was being designed. I learned a lot from Jack.
But he had already, prior to you, done the Marlin Mansion in Ponca City.
Yes, years ago. The John Mabee House here. The McClintock House.
So he had a reputation.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And maybe was feeling snobbery.
And what was happening to him, for instance, he had done the Howard Whitehill House here. The Whitehills' children were all gone, and they wanted to move to something smaller. So several of the commissions that he had while I was working for him were these former clients who wanted a smaller house, or former client's children who wandered the house.
The Marlin Mansion, and then there's a connection here because obviously you knew Ponca City
Yes. So
well, and he had done that. It was known as Palace of the Prairies,
yes.
I believe. Just for background, Mr. Marlin was elected to the Congress from northern Oklahoma in 1932, and then he was the 10th governor of Oklahoma as of 1934. He was a Democrat, and he made his fortune in oil, so he had all this money to spend on the Marlin Mansion.
Yes, which he lost. It's money. He was able to save the Marlin Mansion because it was his homestead. Of course, I've mentioned two of my books are on Ponca City and Kay County, and certainly the Marlin Mansion is included in those books. Apparently what happened, he had one of the largest oil companies in the United States at the time, and of course he was working on borrowed money. He was borrowing money from different New York City banks. And the Rockefellers, I believe, Standard Oil, is that Rockefellers, they came to him and they said, "Why don't you consolidate all your loans with us and we will take care of them at a lower percentage?" So he did. And immediately after that occurred, they called in all of the notes and he just lost everything.
Jack, as you call him, Forsyth, here in Tulsa and in Claremore, he did the Will Rogers Memorial.
You want to know how he got the Will Rogers Memorial?
Sure.
Well, when I did one of my books on John Duncan Forsyth, I went to the Will Rogers Memorial, their library, to check things out. It was a competition. There were three architects, Donald McCormick here in town, a New York City architect, and John Duncan Forsyth. And they had the renderings that McCormick and the New York architect had done for the competition. I said, "Well, what about John Duncan Forsyth?" They said, he didn't have to submit one. Marlin was governor at the time, so it was an end deal.
We have Daniel Webster High School.
Yes, he associated with two other architects on that.
Right, where Art Deco is being featured.
Yes.
Daniel Webster.
Yes.
Just a little background on Art Deco, because Tulsa is famous for Art Deco,
yes,
as other cities are as well.
Yes.
Does that date back to the middle 20s, 1925 or so?
Yes, now, and into the 30s.
And what was Art Deco?
Well, it was a style of architecture. You have your traditional style. You have your Art Nouveau style, which was taken from plant life and things, very flowing lines to it. Art Deco was probably representative of the time, particularly the Depression. And Tulsa was blossoming during that Art Deco period. That's the reason why we have so many wonderful Art Deco buildings here in town. John Duncan Forsyth's home that he built for himself here in Tulsa, it's on Birmingham, close to the Tulsa Tennis Club, a white poured concrete, two-story structure. It won a national competition by the National Concrete Institute or something like that. It's been featured in one of my books. It does not look like it did originally because this large addition has been put on the front of it, a one-story addition, and it's very compatible. The Seidenbachs that own Seidenbach's store here lived there for years and years.
We'll give them credit, too, for the Bartlesville High School.
Yes, it used to be called College High, and it's a wonderful example of Art Deco architecture.
You published a book titled The Art and Architecture of John Duncan Forsyth.
Well, then I did one of the architecture of Charles Stevens Dilbeck, who left Tulsa in 1933 and relocated to Dallas. I have met his widow, and in Dallas, if you live in a Dilbeck house, you have arrived.
What would you say about Mr. Forsyth that you learned from him that you have used down through the years?
Except what came naturally, which wasn't that much, I received all of my training in traditional architecture through him. And apparently he recognized my talent because he would let me do a lot of design work on his structures.
He was married many times.
Six times, Henry VIII and John Duncan Forsyth, twice to the same woman. But he liked to talk about his marriages. He had one that really, he had to be in a real good mood to talk about her. So he would discuss the others, but not this one. But he was married to Mary at the time I worked for him. She later on died. And then he married another lady. She outlived him.
He died in 1963.
Yes.
Was that funeral held here in Tulsa?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was at the Unitarian's Church, All Souls, because he had designed that.
That's right.
I believe he had leukemia. I went to see him in his later months. He lost a great deal of weight.
Let's also give him credit. This is where Grand Lake comes in. He designed the Pensacola Dam.
Yes. But he never mentioned that in our talks. He wanted us to all bring our lunches. We would sit around a table and he would talk. That's what he liked doing. His office at that time was on Detroit. Wolferman's grocery store was nearby. I would go over there and buy a little container of pimento cheese and a small loaf of French bread. I was eating on 15 cents a day, I believe. I think I'd used the pimento cheese and the bread for two meals.
But you said in all your sitting around lunch discussions, he never talked about the Pensacola Dam.
No.
I wonder why that was.
Because I don't know.
That, too, has an Art Deco style.
Art Deco. He didn't design the structure of the dam. He just designed the decoration, shall we say.
All right. It is known as the world's longest multiple arch dam.
Right.
And that's
right.
Because of his design
yes.
for it. It could have been just a straight flat wall, I
that's
guess,
right.
But he added that on.
Right.